Salam, salam, dude. Dinner.
Hey, Atef, how are you, man?
I'm good. How's it going?
I'm good.
Welcome, everyone, again, for joining us today. Today, we have David Lissano to share us his tech journey. And thank you, everyone, for taking time to join us and share your time with us. David, thank you so much for willing to join us and share us your journey.
It's my honor.
I know you speak a little bit. I mean, you can understand a little bit of Amharic. That reason, we're gonna continue using English as a main kind of communication for our session today. But I might be slipping some Amharic because your skill.
Okay.
Once again, thank you so much, David, for joining us today. And I'm so much interested to learn your journey. I'm sure many are also interested. Perfect. So I'll start my question with the basic one. Tell us about yourself. Who is David? Where did you grow up, and where did you go to school, and how did you get your first salary? It's maybe a first payment, one-time payment, maybe recurrent, depending on what you have done first. But what made you earn your first money?
Okay. So I guess I would say, if I had to describe myself first and foremost, I'm definitely more of a creative person. I would say that I'm an artist first, who's had quite an interesting journey in tech. I was born in Addis, and I came here when I was 3, and basically lived here, grew up here in the States. And hence why a lot of this conversation is going to be in English. primarily grew up, lived in Buffalo, New York for some time, lived in Missouri. Both my parents came here on graduate scholarships. So they, you know, they were studying. My dad was becoming a civil engineer. And then, you know, when the situation back home turned not so favorable, they decided to stay here, and we, you know, just grew up here. So I went to Teaneck High School, that's up in northern New Jersey, and I went to Rutgers for my undergraduate degree in mechanical engineering, and I got a second Bachelor of Arts in Africana Studies. And my first job was really an internship that I got while I was going to college. It was a summer internship, and it was with a public electric and gas utility company working at their corporate headquarters. And that's really where I became, where I first got introduced to programming in VB, Visual Basic. And back then, I think it was like VB 3.0 maybe, or something like that. We're talking 1990.
You're exposing yourself, by the way. You're exposing your age.
Oh, yeah. I've been in tech now, like, going on, you know, since 95 when I graduated. So
that's amazing.
It's been a long time. 27 years now, I guess, at this point. I learned early VB. And from there, it just, you know, I've always been kind of into tech, whether it was from growing up playing video games and those kind of things. So I've always been interested in gadgets, and I remember getting the first iPhone and waiting in line for it and all of that. So I'm a creative enthusiast who's passionate about technology. It's been an amazing career. I wouldn't go back and really change anything about it. I learned a lot, met some amazing people, traveled to, you know, interesting places, and just experienced things. So that's kind of my highlight, and I'm sure we'll dive into different parts of it through this conversation.
Absolutely. I think thank you. You have covered all of the questions I have. So let's proceed to the next question.
Okay.
Because you are eager to jump into the tech, but I want to maybe go back to that before you joined the tech. And you went to a university and you actually studied mechanical engineering plus African studies at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And can you tell us what happened?
Yeah, sure.
What made you decide to go through that?
Well, you know, my initial, it's interesting because my initial, coming out of high school, I wanted to become an artist. I wanted to go to New York. I wanted to study at the School of Visual Arts or join, NYU Tisch school and pursue that. But, my parents being Abishai, they're very conservative and, I didn't have much choice. It was either you're going to be an engineer, a scientist of some kind, or, a doctor or lawyer, something more conservative kind of field. So I was fortunately good at math and science. I've always been a very studious person. And so I went into mechanical engineering. And, you have to pick some electives, some liberal arts electives. Very few they offer in engineering. But at the time, I decided to take some Africana studies classes and really was amazed to learn what I didn't know and wasn't taught in high school in America about, just Black history in general. And I was very fortunate at the time to have actually Professor Ivan Van Sertima, who's quite a renowned Africana studies professor, and Dr. Tate was also head of the Department of Africana Studies. And we had a really good relationship, many memories till this day. And my passion, I just kind of rose to the occasion and decided to take more and more courses. And by the time I was a junior, I realized I had amassed enough courses in Africana studies that, with just a few more classes, I could actually get a second bachelor's degree. So I went for it, and it wasn't anything intentional or planned. It was very challenging, balancing both curriculum, both workloads. But I think it in the end, it kind of was a good balance, It wasn't all hard science. It was also like writing, humanities, history. So that's kind of awesome. How I fell into that. Yeah.
I'm sure your parents were proud because you had two degrees. And I think that
for the
that
price was, of one.
I know. Yeah. I'm sure because most Ethiopian parents, Habesha parents mostly, they are proud when their kids and anyone, even relatives have two degrees.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. So let's go to the Honeywell, your first job as an engineer. And you spent a few months there. And can you tell us your experience and why you left as well? And what triggered the move to tech?
Yeah, absolutely. So, at Honeywell, I joined their mechanics division. And this was basically their HVAC systems and how they get programmed. And not like the AC and heat in your house per se, but like for large corporate buildings. And they had to be programmed. So I was doing a lot of the domain-specific language programming for those devices. And, it was okay. And it was the first time I got a job. I was making good money. I remember at the time the starting salary, I think, was like $45,000, which is, not a lot in today's money. But back then, it was a very, very well-paying job out of college. Respectively with other degrees that, comparing it to other non-engineering degrees. And so it was a very good job. I remember getting my first apartment and kind of feeling like a grown person. And my buddy, a very good friend of mine, he's from Trinidad. He was working at Merrill Lynch at the time, and he was also an engineer, and he told me about this program, this kind of accelerated management program, and they're looking for candidates. And he threw my hat, you know, and he told me that how much they pay, you know. So immediately, as a young kid, I was like, wow, they're paying like $5,000 more. That's significant, right, when you're making $45,000. So he gave my resume, and one thing led to another. I interviewed, and I was accepted into this accelerated management program at the time. And, yeah, then I went into Merrill Lynch, learned Java. They taught me C++ and Java. And we had to learn about stocks for the first time. And, you know, this would be one of my biggest advices. I just fell into the world of stocks and investing and thinking about retirement plans. And I was very fortunate, you know, at that age to be exposed to these markets, right? Because as you get older, you realize that retirement planning and savings is critical. And the earlier you can start, the better. And so that's one of the words of advice I always give to when I speak to younger audiences, is the need to really be aware and focused around saving money. If your company or engagement offers plans to do that. So that's how I got into from Honeywell into Merrill, and that started my whole journey as a software programmer.
Amazing. That's amazing journey. Sometimes your friends living in the same apartment or maybe the same flat with you can actually lead into an amazing journey.
Yeah.
So you shared us how you joined tech and how you actually got into tech through Merrill Lynch 6 months training. What made it easier or smoother beside the training? And what were the challenges at the early stage in your tech job?
It made it easier. It was definitely challenging because it was a super intense program, meaning in 6 months you had to learn two programming languages, also take these kind of Series 7, Series 63 stockbroker license exams, learn business concepts and all this. So it was very intense. But the good thing, I think, for me was that the discipline of engineering, the workload of the engineering school was also very intense. So I was kind of used to being under the gun, you know, having to study a lot of technical information, digest it, and then be examined, right? Take a test. So I think coming out of college with that kind of just discipline really helped me transition into this very competitive, very fast-paced world of finance.
Amazing. That's actually amazing. Maybe walk us through the rest of the positions you held in your career. I know you spent quite some time at Merrill Lynch Simulation Station, Booz Allen, Hamilton, and EPI. I know a significant amount of time would be at Booz Allen and Simulation Station. Maybe you can give us some kind of walkthrough.
Sure. So Merrill was a very, like I mentioned, it was the financial markets, a very exciting time, especially the early 90s. I mean, this is when like the .com era was happening. And I actually left Merrill because one of the vice presidents was going to become a chief technology officer at a different company. And I was one of the few staff he actually, you know, solicited to join him to start with this financial company startup. And, you know, at the time, you don't have kids. You can take risks. Right. So I left Merrill, making good amount of money as a consultant. And that's when I, went into that field. It didn't last long, maybe a few years. And that's actually not even probably, if you see in my LinkedIn, yeah, it's probably there. And then another friend of mine from high school was a consultant with Booz Allen Hamilton. And, we got to talking. I told him, yeah, I'm free. I'm leaving this other venture. And he said, I can get you a job at Booz. And then I went to do Booz. And Booz was really transformative. That's really where my career into management took off, so instead of being just a software programmer, now I managed, over time, I was given responsibility to manage team of software developers. So that's when I started to learn more than just the code, right? Then you get into code quality, code testing, deployment, production support, so on and so forth, getting into contracts, how you do bid for contracts. More and more into the business side of things. And that's why I stayed with Booz Allen for 10 years, until I kind of felt I hit a bit of a ceiling there. And then in 2012 is when I had my most significant kind of catapult in my career, elevation, was when I became chief architect at the Associated Press. So that was a big step for me, very exciting transition. So going from developer to software development team manager, and learning the ins and outs of how to manage teams, the discipline of engineering and doing really proper software development, lifecycle management, and so forth. That opportunity, I was able to transition into doing architecture. And architecture was very appealing to me because it requires storytelling. It requires a different kind of visual skill. And because I'm an artist and because I have a very creative side to me, I did very well. And it was just a kind of a natural fit. And so I decided at that time I didn't want to continue programming and being a software engineer as much. And I wanted to go into IT architecture and lead architecture teams. And, architecture and IT is not very different than traditional, what you think of as architecture for like buildings and structures. It kind of takes a lot of those same principles but into the IT world. So that was exciting, working now for the Associated Press. It's a global company. You're exposed now to concerns globally. You have to think about things globally. And so that elevated yet again my exposure. Now, a lot of times you get into these kind of positions and you're always going to have those doubts in your head of, can I really do this? it's challenging. Mm-hmm. And as you keep going up and up in these ranks as well, there's less and less of us that you're surrounded with and interacting with. So there's also that aspect of it. Mm-hmm. But those out of those three, that's kind of the transition going from Merrill Lynch to Booz Allen to the Associated Press.
Right. I think you had an amazing career, and I think it's impressive how you actually managed to be where you are right now. But I noticed there is actually a pattern where you don't like to spend as much time in a company. I think one and a half years to 2 years is a pattern, but the ones that I actually mentioned earlier where the most time you spend in a company, I mean, yeah, Estee Lauder, still you're at Estee Lauder, 2 years, 2 years going.
Yep.
And Can you tell us what strategy you are using, or is it a strategy or is it opportunity first?
It's where readiness meets opportunity, I'll just say. Mm-hmm. So what I mean by that is you should never get too comfortable in any position, right? Comfort is going to be your weakness, because when opportunity presents itself, you may not be ready mentally, mm-hmm. or even like your resume might not be up to date, as an example, right? You don't mm-hmm. keep your profile on your LinkedIn where you network with other people up to date. Those kind of things I always tell people is the always being ready, right? Always positioning yourself in the best light. And you know, manicuring your external image is important. Now, with the pattern that you described with, 18 to 2 years, some of it was just circumstance. I enjoyed, for instance, Macmillan was a lot of fun. It was in the higher education space. So Macmillan is a major book publisher. I'm sure everyone that's gone to college or graduate school on this forum has mm-hmm. probably purchased a book from Macmillan during the course of study. So they're a huge international player based out, you know, formerly from Germany. And that was my really biggest entry into the cloud space. So cloud technology, I was helping to modernize and transform. It was a lot of fun, but when they decided to take their leadership, their corporate IT leadership, moving to Austin, Texas, I didn't want to go. My family's here, my kids are here in New Jersey, and I didn't want to be that far away. So that kind of ended that relationship. And, you know, but I left with a lot of different networks of people that I met, for the former CTO of Macmillan is now the CTO down in Florida for another major ed tech company. I met private equity investors that deal in the ed tech space. And so, you know, just through that network alone, I sometimes do freelance due diligence for private equity companies that are investing in ed tech, right? Ed tech startups. So I go in and I interview their technology stack. I do an evaluation and I give them advice on the risk for their investment. And this just sprouted up organically through my time and exposure those 2 years in Macmillan. So it's paid off in dividends. If you perform well and you make good impressions and you're always networking and you're always ready for opportunity, as an example. Then I went on to HedgeServe, and that was more in the finance space. But for me, they were a little too conservative, meaning I realized that if I stayed there too long, I wouldn't stay current with like the technology. Uh-huh. And, they initially gave me a very high pay and they said all the right things to kind of get me to join the team. But once I was there and once we started putting plans in place, there was just a lot of pushback. There was a lot of like resistance to change because IT is as much cultural change within companies as it is just IT strategy. So it was difficult, right? And I realized, okay, look, if I stay here another 18 months, I'm going to be so far behind in cloud technology. I don't know if I'll be able to leave, right? So I left HedgeServe and I went to ASCAP. And then that one was a little better. But again, ASCAP, I don't know if most people don't know, they're in the music industry. So what happens is all the artist music that we listen to, like on iTunes and Spotify and Pandora, whatever you listen to music, all that streaming, they have to get paid. And so ASCAP is the largest and the oldest royalties paying company in the United States. And so I went to work for them We did some exciting things. We did a few transformations, but once again, it wasn't a good fit in terms of where I wanted to go and where I wanted to see my career leading. And so rather than waiting for an opportunity, this time I proactively looked for a different opportunity, and that's how I landed here at Estee Lauder. And I have had, Estee is probably the best company I've worked with for in my career. I'm very happy about where I am now, and I'll probably, hopefully things work out and I'll end up retiring here.
Amazing.
But yeah, that's kind of been my strategy, why I've moved, why it seems like, you know, every 2 years. That's
interesting.
What I would say. Yeah.
Interesting. So maybe I wasn't planning to ask you this, but I haven't noticed maybe you studied kind of MBA in the digital. Did you actually got the inspiration when to move into management after you MBA, or you actually wanted to study MBA to actually equip yourself more? Because earlier you said readiness means opportunity. And were you getting ready for the management role?
Excellent question. So when I started managing teams at Booz Allen, right? one of my characteristics is when I do something, I really want to do, I go all in, right? Like I really dedicate myself to mastering a topic or a subject matter. And so when I started managing teams, I said, I have a natural way of just working with people and I'm a very collaborative person. But I wanted to expand my knowledge of management. And I remember talking with other peers, you know, what's valuable in terms of moving up in the management realms, getting those higher level, you know, director positions and VP positions and so forth. And a lot of it was based around you need an MBA. So it seemed like that was in the best way to go forward in terms of a career boost. So I got my MBA and the company was paying for it. So Booz Allen paid for my MBA. It took me a little bit longer. You know, I was a father of two boys. So you have to balance the work life and academia. So I paced myself, but I finally got it. And I also got certifications. So knowing that I also wanted to move into architecture, I looked at like, what do you need to be an enterprise architect? And TOGAF certifications. And, you know, if anyone is thinking about specializing in a career, because now it's all about specializations, you know, you should look at getting that paper behind your name, whether you're going to cloud, you become a Azure, AWS cloud architect, or a solution architect, or solutions developer, or DevOps specialist, you know, whatever that passion of yours is, that will kind of give you those credentials, legitimize your experience, you should work towards preparing those, not because there's a specific opportunity, but when that opportunity presents itself, you're ready.
All right. I think you have answered most of the question. I have one or two questions maybe.
Absolutely.
To go over. Yeah. So you are a Black person. We cannot hide that. And you have made amazing paths in your career. And you are immigrant. Basically, your parents immigrated when you were 3 years old. So you are not immune to, you know, any kind of profiling and overlooking because of your skin of color and your status. Mm-hmm. Even though you are American, you might be overlooked or you might be facing all the challenges that the Black community are facing, right? So can you tell us your experience as a Black and immigrant person?
I mean, look, I've faced explicit racism as a much when I was much younger. in the court, you know, in our outside settings, right? There's been situations, right? But in terms of the corporate world, I can't say that anyone has been explicitly discriminatory to me in any way, shape, or form. However, you know, I did at one point wonder why at the level I was at, I've never been a CTO, right? And so even despite my qualifications, and that really came during my experience at Macmillan, you know, I was kind of like the right hand of the CTO at the time when the mix-up, when the shakeup happened and management wanted to change, the thinking was that I would be kind of the natural thing. But, you know, there's more to politics at that level than maybe even I was sensitive to. And, you know, I didn't get the CTO role or the CIO role at the time. And, you know, there's always that kind of question that nags you in the back of your head, like, you know, this is a German company. Mm-hmm. Europeans, like, you know, am I being overlooked this way? But, you know, on the flip side, what I'll say is that I have a very large family. My dad, all my uncles are careered PhD types, you know, that rose very high within their respective fields. You know, SVPs, EVPs of major corporations, World Bank, United Nations. So I saw examples of success, very successful Black men, throughout my life. And I think that kind of balanced any kind of nervousness or anxiety that could naturally happen when you question, why am, you know, did I get overlooked in this promotion? And it really just gave me that confidence that, no, I can do this. I can move on. I can be the driver of my career and make and forge a way. And I think having that balanced attitude is healthy versus like going down that path of, you know, I'm always going to be held back because of my skin, or I'll always be discriminated against my skin. It can kind of backfire on you. So that's always given me the confidence to hold my head up, move on, seek that opportunity, and never think that I'm not qualified to do so. It's worked out really well for me, I think.
So you pushed like against the tides, and you were actually able to push forward and become successful in your career path. That's amazing. Yeah. That's interesting, and I hope actually people, myself actually, I'm learning a lot, and our audience are actually learning from this, because this is inspirational, and I hope that's gonna help. My last question for today. You want to say something?
No, I was going to say, you mentioned something earlier that I didn't touch on that I think might be interesting for the audience to also hear. Mm-hmm. You mentioned a company called The Stimulation Station.
Yeah.
And how it was there for a long time. Now, the Stimulation Station is actually a creative digital media company that I founded. I kind of co-founded with several other of my college friends. Mm-hmm. And we all went through the engineering program together. We were all part of the National Society of Black Engineers, NSBE. So for anybody on the call that's listening today, and if you're in the engineering area, I highly encourage you to join NSBE. But back to the Stimulation Station, that 6 year period was kind of freelance work that I did. And one of the biggest accomplishments that I was able to do there was I actually wrote, illustrated, and published a 13-episode animated series for the Sci-Fi Channel, which is something completely different than, you know, working at Merrill Lynch in the corporate in Booz Allen Hamilton in my spare time. And I had a very supportive, my ex-wife was super supportive during that time. You know, in my evening time, I was actually drawing, illustrating, animating, recording voiceover with different hired actors and talent, and putting together like this mini little 3-minute clips of these episodes that we'd produce once a month for like about 18 months. It took us to turn it around, but it was so much fun. And it was also a great creative outlet for me. And that's why I always tell people, you should always have something, some kind of passion, something you do that's completely different than your day job. And to kind of balance out and give your life some greater perspective and depth. That was just one thing I wanted to circle back around on.
Yeah, that's impressive because I wanted to ask you about your artistic experience, and because you mentioned it quite a lot, you are an artist, and I wasn't able to actually come back to it, and thank you for clarifying that.
Yeah, no worries.
All right, so my last question would be, you know, the world it is in a huge kind of shakeup. There is so mm-hmm. much disruption going on. Every sector, everywhere, our daily life is affected, right? Due to the COVID, and the COVID actually pushed things into a different dimension, like working from home, like the remote working. So mm-hmm. can you tell us what keep you sane in this situation? And I know you have done some work and able to actually be certified to actually instruct yoga, I know that may help you, but can you tell us
more? Like you said, this is unprecedented, right? Like what we've all experienced together over the last 2 years has been incredible. You know, at first I like to say, I hope everyone on this and your families or everyone's doing well. And I send everyone positive energy. But I think what keeps me sane, and you alluded to it, is I discovered maybe about seven, eight years ago, the science of yoga. And that's really opened up a lot of potential in my life, I'll just say. I mean, this is my personal journey. Yoga has been instrumental in keeping me focused, building and really cultivating a greater sense of self-awareness. And the benefits of this are profound. I mean, it'll affect every aspect of your life, professionally, personally, even financially, I think, as well. And having yoga and a daily practice around it, movement, keeping myself active, there's biological evidence that just, you know, increases a positive outcome, positive response, positive mental attitude. And I have to agree with what that's done. So I always encourage people to move and do something physical and take really good care of yourself. I think that at my age now, you know, I'm 49, I'm going to be 50, this year. And I've never been in better shape in my life. Like I've never been stronger, more flexible. You know, I practice handstands like 10 times a day. You know, I'm in my second yoga teacher training, actually now as we speak. And, I do plan to teach at some point. That might be my third chapter in my life. And who knew that 20 years ago, if you told me, Dawit, you know, you might become a yoga instructor one day, I'd have laughed because I would have been like, you know, that's insane. Like, what the heck is yoga? And so that is what's been a big part of really helping me navigate this very, very difficult time, you know, mentally. The other part of it, I'd say, which is also important, is diet, right? I know when I was younger, like most people, you just kind of take your vigor for granted. And but I've grown to understand the role and importance of diet and keeping a good, clear mind as well. So I'm a vegan, but it doesn't mean that that's the only path you have to take nutritionally for living a healthy life. That's just the path I chose. But I would say that just becoming more aware of how you take care of yourself in a comprehensive way, both what you take in and what you give out in terms of your energy output, is really what I've found to be the answer to a lot of the kind of problems that can develop in people's lives when in this kind of pandemic, shutdown, anxiety-driven, 24-hour news cycle, social media, and all that kind of stuff, right, that we get kind of plugged into a little too much.
Right. Yeah, thank you so much. Actually, you give us more insight into how you actually you are managing your daily life. You know, this is amazing advice. So I think I'm done with my questions, and maybe okay. If there is anyone interested to come up to the stage and ask David question, you can come up maybe you can also send me your question by back channel. Feel free to join the conversation. All right, Abel is coming up.
Thanks, Steph, first of all. And also, David, it's really an awesome journey that you just shared with us. And thanks a lot. No. Myself, being in a tech, I completely had another question. Mm-hmm. But then later I changed my mind because I really wanted to talk about the last part of the conversation. The fact that you mentioned that how we should start taking care of ourselves. Mm-hmm. So my question is simple. When did you start and when did you realize that you should take care of yourself?
Great question. Probably I came to it kind of late. I wish I had learned about yoga in my 20s. But you come to it when you're ready, right? When you're exposed to the information at the time that's right. And I've been doing yoga. And when I say I do yoga, I mean I do it, really do it. Like I go about 6 days a week. And I've been doing that for about the last 8 years. So I was probably in my early 40s when I first got introduced to yoga. And I became, I changed my diet probably 2.5 years ago. I was vegetarian and eating fish for a long time. And then, you know, as you get older, you also realize, at least in my family, I'll say that my parents' generation doesn't really talk about health-related matters with us, the younger generation, as much as we probably should be. And just in general, it's kind of like frowned upon to talk about health issues in our community. And, you know, I'm talking more widely, at least my experience, right? I can speak just to my experience. And it's unfortunate. I think that, you know, kids and their parents should have that talk at some time, not when you're young, but when you're older. And so I've really changed my philosophy of, you know, the importance of self-care and put that first in my life now. And I encourage people when I'm able to talk and they're willing to listen to do the same at whatever stage you're at in your life.
Does that answer your question, Abby?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
If you have a technical question, you can also go ahead.
Yeah.
Until any next person comes in. But
okay, another.
You have another.
Okay, I do have another one question, a little bit technical. So are you, I'm not sure if you're still in the cloud business. Are you?
Yes.
Okay, so for someone like a very, let's say, young person who wants to join this amazing career, what would be the first thing that you would say if you want to, if you are, let's say, 20, 21, 23 years old yourself?
Yeah.
What would you advise for that person?
Oh, man, if you are 21, 22, 23, I mean, my goodness, it's so many options at this point. What I would say is keep an open mind, right? Just stay open to a variety of different experiences, because there's such highly specialization in the tech field, right? Now you have people that, like, some people might really be good and be drawn to coding, right? And they want to code. Other people may go into user experience design, UX design. Some people may have a really good talent at testing software. I've met some very talented testers, and each one of these areas are entire disciplines in themselves. You could spend years and years mastering. So what I would say is, as a young person, try to get as much exposure to all aspects of this thing, right? Some people are good at doing networking, infrastructure, and specifically in the cloud space, they've also kind of specialized in those areas. But to generally get exposed, I would say, you know, start with the certification, and not necessarily that you have to get certified. It's great if you can get that. But the teaching, the learning paths, the modules, the hands-on, will start to, you'll start to slowly discover. And again, this goes back to my taking care of yourself. You'll start to cultivate a sense of awareness of who you are, what you like, what you're drawn to, and maybe what you're not liking. Like, I never, for instance, liked database design. I just, I had to do it and I had to understand it, but it wasn't like an area, I found it very boring, like that area. I like to stay more on the front end, but that was my kind of thing. Nothing, it's no judgment on databases, but it's not really my forte. So I would say just keep an open mind, try to get as much exposure to different aspects, meet people in other aspects, network. There's so much networking. You might be drawn to machine learning. Data science is like a huge area that's exploding. And along the way, you'll get paid well, right? And on your personal kind of growth. So that's my advice to you right now. And you'll find your passion, you'll find the thing you're good at, the thing you can carve out for yourself and make a way. But don't worry, if you're not sure, if you can't find, you're in the right place, that's where you should be. And you'll figure out what you like to do.
Yeah, thank you, Abel. Thank you for coming to the stage. Yeah, it's a brave heart and asking great questions.
Great questions, man. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you, Dev.
I have two questions from audience. Mm-hmm. One is a bit generic, but I think you can give us a little bit generic answer as well. What did you suggest? What roadmap did you suggest to follow for the college student who wants to be a software engineer? So kind of what tips do you have for anyone who is actually studying in a college who wants to be a software engineer?
Well, number one, get good grades. I think that goes without being said. Focus on getting your grades. If you can develop the fundamentals of understanding, it's an art. Software development is truly an art. Those who are really good at it are, I think of them as sort of artists, because they're very good at a language, and they can manipulate that language to create, you know, all the different experiences we have with technology. So if you're doing that, what I would say is build a foundation around a language, whether it's Java or you know, any of these other type of very, I mean, there's so many languages out there. And then try to start understanding design principles of programming, right? So there's a lot of different design types of patterns and principles and best practices. There are cookbooks out there, right? And these cookbooks really are developed around what are industry best practices, because a lot of times what you start to discover is that you're really programming a lot of the same type of, you know, I'm getting a little nerdy, but sort of the same patterns of your algorithms and your languages, right? So, and maybe this is more advanced, but you over time, those kind of cookbooks or patterns make you a very fast and efficient programmer, I would say. So
interesting.
I hope that wasn't.
Thank you.
Too.
Thanks, yeah. Max. I have another question from audience, and I'll come back to you, my Mohammed. So the question coming from Dougie says, thanks for your time. I have two questions. My question is, what is your advice for those who wanting to join the cloud IT? Their education background is not related to IT.
Mm-hmm.
So this is one, the first question.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. The other one is, I have two certifications and looking for junior position. Do you have any recommendations, like companies to hire? Are you hiring? the last part is mine.
Yeah. Okay. So the first question, so the second question was career based, and the first question, remind me again.
The first question is for those who doesn't have an IT background, but
okay.
who have done
yeah.
some kind of trainings and stuff,
yeah.
but who want to join that.
Yeah, you know, the biggest thing people look at is what are you doing today, right? What are you involved with now? And there's so many different ways that you could build up experience. People are looking for experience all the time. So it's not unusual that people come from different backgrounds and then pivot and go into something else. That happens all the time. It's good that you're getting certifications. I think, like I mentioned earlier, that kind of legitimizes at least your understanding of the discipline. And, you know, do even freelance work. There's always freelance work available in whatever area you're specializing in. Go to meetups, join, you know, teams trying to maybe do startups or doing experiments, and just network at that time, because the biggest thing is you want to get your brand, your personal self out there and known and meeting people. And that's really the best way that'll get you that exposure, because there's a lot of appetite for talent right now for junior positions, all the way up to very seniors. Don't be discouraged, you know, make that move. And the second question was related to kind of
getting the junior positions.
Junior positions, yeah. Yes, we are hiring. And all the positions are on the web. So if you go to Estee Lauder careers, if you Google that, you should be able to find our public portal, depending on what your skill set is. Everything that we have publicly available is out there. I'm also on LinkedIn. So anyone that wants to connect, you can find me there as well. But yeah, that would go back to just, networking, especially if you're a junior in a junior position, networking, getting involved in something that will give you some kind of experience so there's no gaps in time where when an employer is looking at your resume, you know, they don't have to ask, like, what have you been doing for the last 2 years? You should have something to say, even if it's a personal project, like, oh, I created a website for my family, or I did this, or, you know, try to be creative to show that you've been applying what you learn. And that's really what's the most important thing, is that you're applying what you learn in some kind of context.
Perfect. Thank you. All right. So I just pinned David's LinkedIn profile on top of the room. So if you want to connect with him, copy it before I move it immediately. There is another question coming from the audience. Okay, let me read the question. Can you please, okay, where do you see yourself in 5 years or 10 years from now?
In 10 years, wow. I hope to be at Estee Lauder, pretty close to retirement. Probably teaching yoga somewhere. In 10 years, yeah. I think, you know, being able to work from anywhere in the world. You know, I hope that this trend continues, because it's pretty exciting from that aspect. Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I hope everything goes as planned, and as the objective you have as well. Ted, please go ahead.
All right, thank you guys for hosting this event. Actually, I didn't get enough time to follow everything what David said, but I think for most part I was following, so it was helpful, I think. So my question to David is, it's more of a broad question. I live in the US, actually. So, I mean, if you have seen IT and data, I work in data science.
Okay.
I don't know if you can consider data science as IT, but it has been increasingly becoming non-traditional, in the sense that people who go into IT and even data science are from non-traditional backgrounds. Mm-hmm. So where do you think that's going to end? Do you think that will end at some point, or if it's going to end, how it's going to end, if you have a general idea on that?
I don't think that's going to end. I think the general, if I'm going to put my futurist hat on, you know, the general trend is more and more we're interacting, managing, becoming aware of data. We're producing data at unprecedented times and volumes in human history than ever before. So I think the fact that you do need people from different backgrounds coming into the data sciences field, because you're dealing with data that's coming from all different contexts. We're quantifying literally everything around us is becoming a quantified subject. So I think it's only going to proliferate more. I think the rise of machine learning, artificial intelligence, is a little bit frightening, but it's inevitable. And if you look at the trends, I mean, when you look at IoT, for instance, right, the Internet of Things, where you have devices sending all kinds of data and telemetry, people have to figure out to make meaning out of that data and what that data means. I certainly can't tell. Like in my industry, for instance, cosmetics, right? We, Estee Lauder, has 30 different brands across the globe, and understanding consumer behavior. I can't do that. You need people that from abroad, different experiences, to come together and make meaning of that data. What does it mean? Maybe you need psychologists. Maybe you need behavioral scientists involved, and mathematicians. So I think data science is a beautiful field. It's and the diversity is what gives it its strength. I hope
that's
that
amazing
answers
question.
Your
Thank you.
Thank you, Ted, for coming. The last question from Ted was amazing. Kind of a futuristic question.
Yeah, that was cool.
Just want to remind everyone to follow the club and maybe to follow myself and Dawit here. And I attached a link in bio to maybe for you to see all of the contents we have, like the social media accounts and everything we post. So Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, all that. You can follow us in these channels. You can also listen to our podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts on our website as well. And we're going to have a session next week with Miriam Said, the digital advisor of the Prime Minister of Ethiopia. And we'll be talking about digital transformation and digitization. What's the difference and what are what they are doing in Ethiopia as a digital economy initiative. So that conversation will be next week, February 5th, the same time. Yeah.
Super fascinating, I will definitely cover. Yeah.
I know. Yeah, we had a session, I think, in November to talk about like the journey so far. And we had a panel discussion. It was amazing turnout, and we had that. So we spoke about the same thing again and again. So this Alamayo actually helped this happen, so that they actually come and join us as well. Okay, Robbie. Hey, Robbie.
Hello.
Hello. Yep. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you, Tef. How are you?
Okay, Arlen. Again, welcome.
Sorry, I just got here, Aon. So I just want to ask one question.
Okay.
And now I'll be leaving. Now, basically, for Dawit. So, basically, how do you see, like, in 5 years? Simple question, but from your perspective, how do you see it? And perspective which has out, can't have low perspective and like diaspora low perspective. How do you see the thing going forward, like in the economy and stuff and everything? Yeah, thank you.
Maybe can you specify the question, Robbie?
Yeah, the question.
Yeah, I didn't understand.
Yeah, the question. The question is basically in 5 years from now. Like, how do you project it if you're, like, I don't know, leading the country and stuff? How do you project it to be, like, implementation-wise? Is it going to be very slow or fast? Like, can you give details? Like, let the diaspora want to turn any sound. Let the diaspora
to is. But what specifically is going to, when you say it, what is
in the tech? In a tech.
I'm assuming the question is to, like, if Dawit is the leader in Ethiopia.
I'm starting to write successfully on the companies. Do you see, like, projecting, like, for diasporas to come and then actively? Because the past couple of months, as you know, Belu Diaspora, they've been actively looking for opportunities. So, andandu me alaganya sao buzu alle, yaganyam sao buzu alle. Again, abzanyochu were kind of like disappointed. Yeah, lona gar. And now they're just wasting their time as you go on tahacho. Now, how do you encourage more of people coming here, usefully on a practically on a usefully on a value, marrying a bit way? How do you see it? Because a lot of diasporas disappointed about what happened.
Coming here.
Yeah, exactly. So, for the diasporas.
It's not a simple question. I think it's actually, you kind of stumped me a little bit, Robbie.
Yeah. So
I don't.
I ask a difficult question.
I think there's tremendous opportunity, not just in here in the States, right? But if you take the example of, like, what's happening in West Africa, for instance, and how more and more tech startups are really taking off and making inroads in some of the mobile spaces. I mean, I think the big some of the challenge has been with in Ethiopia has been around the infrastructure and the modernization. So, you know, the country has really suffered in the IT space, I think, because of power and because of just internet infrastructure, a lack of it. And then the mobile space is very, very outdated. And so I think the confluence of those three things have really set back the country. And we're going to continually be challenged until we can make really big investments and upgrades in those capacities. Now, more broadly speaking, there are, I think, insourcing opportunities within the country. Coming here, from somebody abroad coming here, it is going to be very challenging, I think, unless you have that experience or some kind of really well-established credentials. Because let's face it, we live in a meritocracy here in the U.S., and everything is based on what kind of paper, what kind of experience, and a little bit about who you also know. So coming here without that context can be very challenging. It could be a very, very big uphill fight, right? And then compound it with any kind of language challenges you might have making inroads. So I think in the entrepreneurial space, there's tremendous opportunity. I mean, Ethiopia has a population of, 115, 110 million. And a lot of that population is very young. So the potential is there. It's just frustrating for me when I see it. And we don't have like the proper infrastructure for really taking advantage of that energy, that youth, skilling them up and really being a power to reckon with on the east side of the continent. Kenya is making a lot in the mobile space. Nigeria is doing a lot there. South Africa is like really taking off. So there's other examples, right? There's analogs on the continent of where success can happen and slowly take foothold. But, you know, I think there's just a lot of fundamental struggle for our country to turn that around and catch up. And that's just my perspective.
Yeah. Just to add to here, we have so optimistic on a view about the country because media level now and again, we're influenced a lot about that. Mm-hmm. But on the ground, a lot of people are trying to survive and not.
Yeah.
They're not trying to think like in the advanced on a conversation we're trying to have here because right. They're trying to survive and stuff, the basic things. Yeah. And if technology can actually solve that, but they'll be happy to. Yeah, diasporas, they're very disappointed. Like again, Tefim, I don't know if you did the research on the diasporas here, the plan data that are going again. And they expected the outcome in the Fellagut Alore Lacho. Nah, I don't know. The next one, diaspora metal be buzuntanal, like the Swellenium, because I don't know. There's so much logistics here, like there's so much things that happen. But Charlie, like basically on Nagaruch no Abzanyo Chu, Michan Nakosawu, it's not like. Take on the watch, of course, outsourcing like but I'm opportunity. Outsourcing like and Masrat Kachaluno. There's only 5-6 companies, Ethiopia Lebucha, outsourcing Misarusa watch, but I'm Tinish Nacho. There's opportunity to get like dollars in the country, again. Outsourcing them all, like it needs a teamwork. Like which I got a medal, so they need to work in a team very like Abzanyo Chu family Nacho, because trust yes for Legualna. Sulaim Tef, I don't know, session Marakafelak outsourcing like Rahel and Balafu Aragahadan, which I joined, which is a very good thing. Now some Akarwana for the diaspora weekend. But yeah.
Thank you. There are so many things that require discussion and actually more detail kind of heart-to-heart communication, because sometimes having a kind of a event doesn't solve a problem, because technology is not about event, it's about working on the ground and doing making changes. The change will start from our mind, right? So sometimes I think in November when we talk about digital transformation journey with Addis Alamayo and Talaun, Dr. Talaun. So Addis Alamayo, you mentioned that sometimes, you know, if you actually make people lead technology where they have no clue what's going on, it's the biggest problem you could ever face. Because if they don't know about technology, if they still ask you how to, you know, log in and how to, you know, reset their password, but they are leading a technology and maybe digital team, there you go, that's your problem. It's not the problem of infrastructure or any capability. It's the people who are actually leading the capability. So there are so many things we could say about this. We are planning to talk about the feedback from the, you know, Ethiopian homecoming diasporas, but we don't know the date. But I'm planning with Jay Jamal. He actually went there and had his experience, maybe positive experience. Some will have negative experience. Robbie, you can join us that on that session and share what you have observed. Maybe you have maybe heard.
Milam, I have someone for you, actually. Diaspora Weekend is Yaorra Soanda. Kasalasa Amit is at DC Norwan. Not Yaorra Nabar, like we're in a coffee shop. Yaorra Nabar, I was mentioning about your club. And he's very interested. TV Lime Carbon Nabar.
Okay.
So advice he said, but the guy is very senior. But he came to Ethiopia for the Diaspora Weekend. And now, if you're wanting to do that, I can introduce you to LinkedIn. I can send you more information.
Perfect.
And now the guy can actually add that. So Z, he attended all the sessions and stuff.
Okay.
He also had low opinion. I don't want to say it.
Thank you for being actually an ambassador to Abesha and Tech. Thank you, Robbie. So thank you for coming and always bringing such a perspective to the stage. Thank you, Robbie. All right, I think that was a bit intense question for you, David. We haven't discussed such a topic earlier, so
I know we need a whole session just for that question, right?
I know it's a huge
topic.
So let me wrap up the session so that you know, we have 10 minutes before we finish according to our plan. And I just want to ask you, maybe if you have any last advice, maybe anything you want to say on top of, you know, what you have already shared us. And if you have any closing statement or any promotion you have, are you speaking on event, maybe people can actually listen and maybe tune into, you can share us.
No announcements. I'm really glad I just I've been kind of introduced to this tech circle. Really glad to see other up and coming technologists. I hope to stay engaged, Tef. So I'm honored that you had me to come and speak to your audience. And if I can contribute in the future, don't hesitate to reach out. And that goes to everybody in this tech family of ours. I'll leave it at that.
All right. Thank you so much. I actually appreciate you coming to join us and share your perspective and your experience. This was amazing. You tempted my English. I didn't try to tempt your Amharic, but maybe next time.
Next time.
So I really appreciate this. I know Rahel introduced us, but yes. I hope to connect maybe from now on. You are welcome to join us anytime. Share your perspective. If you have anything to share us anytime, let me know. We can set up a session in the future.
Okay. Okay. So great. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so much, everyone. Have a wonderful weekend. Thank you, David. Enjoy your weekend.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.